2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our next listener, Ton, says they have aphids on their cabbage and they've heard that dish soap will take care of them. Is that true? And what should they do to get rid of them?
You know, I've been inundated this year with people just having love affairs with using dish soap in the yard, thinking it's somehow safer than something like horticultural soap. We do. So as the law reads, yes, you can use dish soap, but there's some limitations, because if you have antibacterial dish soap, that's considered against the law, because if it kills bacteria, it's actually considered a pesticide.
So you're talking real law. It's not like against horticulture.
Yeah, and Utah State University Extension does not recommend the use of products that do not have a direct label for the pest being controlled. And so, yes, it will, but USU Extension always recommends horticultural soap because it's been tested. And so there's liability issues, but you never know when a company is going to change their formulation or something goes wrong. And so there's people out there saying, I've been using Dawn for 30 years and it's been fine. Well, that's fine. But for a lot of reasons, Utah State University Extension and me personally, I will not recommend use of products unless there's a label on there saying we control aphids and we've been approved by the EPA.
Right. And there's danger to it, obviously.
There is.
All right. Let's go to Blaine in South Jordan. Good morning, Blaine. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. I have two peony plants on the east side of my home that are about 3 feet high and 3 feet in diameter. I was wondering when would be the best time to split them, before frost or after frost?
They need to die back before you do anything.
Okay.
So, yeah, so if you did it now, you'd most likely kill them. So wait till they die back with, you know, the cool weather, and then go ahead and try to split them.
Okay. That's what I need to know. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Blaine, for your call this morning. Our next listener, Ton, says they planted some boxwoods 4 years ago. They've done well until this year. They all appear to be yellowish green. They're on the north side of the home, and they get watered by the sprinklers a couple times a week. Any ideas on how to revive them?
Not enough information for me to really say yes or no. I would encourage them to call in. There's a lot of different things. If every one of them is looking light yellow, then it's something environmental. You know, if they had snow piled on them that was salty, that could be some of it. If they've somehow been receiving less water, that would be another thing to check out. But if they're all doing it, it's something in the environment. If it were one or two, then it could be a disease.
Yeah, it sounds like something environmental to have them all do that.
It does.
Best time frame to aerate the lawn this fall and overseed, considering the water restrictions?
Talk to your irrigation company and see what your restrictions are. I can't really encourage people to just wholesale go renovate their lawns with our dire need of water. So some companies like Santaquin, I haven't seen any official restrictions. You know, they've, I think, suggested or kind of required the 10 in the morning, don't water after 10, and don't water before 6 in the evening. But I haven't seen any official restrictions. But then you have Davis Weber Canal and other cities that are just completely out of water. So it is a good idea to aerate before you reseed, but check with your irrigation company for further details because you may not be able to.
All right. This person, I guess, it sounds like they need to prepare the soil prior to, like, they're doing a spot reseed or resod, depending on what they do. So how do they prepare that?
If the area is dead, just take out the dead grass and rework the soil and get it loose so that they can get good seed-to-soil contact. And once they have it leveled and put the seed down, cover it with about a quarter to a third of an inch of compost, just a really finely ground compost, and water it. You'll probably have to water it 3 or 4 times a day so that you're just treating it like new lawn. And once it starts to grow and you get it up an inch or two, you can slowly start to taper off on the water.
All right, let's take a call from Trent in West Valley. Good morning, Trent.
I planted a bristle cone in my back field early in the spring, and I had to prop it up because there wasn't much root mass. And now it's like the needles on the bottom branches and on the inside of the tree are coming off. Is that normal? It's got new growth on it, though.
It may be normal just from drought stress and being transplanted and everything else. You know, that can be a little normal, but it's also a sign that the tree is stressed. How often have you been watering it?
Twice a week.
And how deeply?
I leave it on there for like 20 minutes, so it's getting to like 18 inches deep.
Okay, and those bristle cones hate excess water. And what I would recommend doing, especially with the cooler temperatures, if you've been going twice a week, you know, if you watered in the last couple of days, before you irrigate again, take a shovel out there, go to the side of the root ball so you're not disturbing the existing roots, and just carefully dig down toward the bottom of the root ball. And if the soil is moist, hold off. So those bristle cones don't like to be watered too much.
Okay, and when can I untie the tree ties to, so, you know, because I've been propping it up early. Like, when can I take
So is
off?
It in a wire basket or...
No, it's not in a wire basket. I just took like a clothesline and just tied it between some posts to keep it upright while it established itself.
Give it till next spring and then take it off next spring if it seems to be a little bit more established. It usually takes a year in the ground to start really getting those roots going, but you don't want to leave it too long because it'll become dependent. But I would leave it till spring if it had pretty shallow and not really a lot of roots.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for your call. Next listener, Ton, says they have dwarf bottle bushes in whiskey barrels. I'm not sure what that is, but they've heard they can keep them through the winter, and they're wondering what the best way to do that would be, like covered patio, garage, against the south side of a house on an RV pad.
I'm not sure what they're referring to. If it's Australian bottle brush, those absolutely are not hardy here. And I don't know if they would even overwinter in a shed. So I don't know what they're referring to when they say bottle bush.
Well, this says bottle brush. I changed it to bottle bush.
Okay, because there are a number of species of bottle brush native to warm Mediterranean climates from Australia. And those would almost need to come into a greenhouse, but I have never seen them here.
So they may not even do well in a garage.
No, I doubt they would, but...
But that would be the best bet, considering the options they gave you there.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's something else that... There's a few things called bottle brush sometimes that aren't. And so I'm confused on what particular species they actually have.
Okay. Let's go to our next caller. That's Alan and Sandy. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, how you doing?
Doing very well, thanks. What's your question?
Okay, I got a two-part question. I just got some peaches that have, like, black spots on them, brown spots on them. It's a virus. If they're safe to eat, you can cut away the spots. And the second question is, in my lawn, I've got stinging nettle. I've got mushrooms the size of softballs. I've got chokeweed, morning glory, clover. Is there a way to get rid of those and not hurt the lawn?
There is. Let's do the peach thing first. That one's a little easier to get rid of as far as just questions, I think. So on your peaches, did you have hail in the last 3 or 4 weeks?
No. I got it from a neighbor. He usually gives me his fruit and his vegetables, and he said these are on him. And he said it's a virus. I asked him if they're safe to eat.
There's not really fruit virus, especially in peach, and so I'm suspicious that it's Carinium blight, which because of the monsoonal moisture we've had, I've seen a lot of it this year, but I've also been seeing hail damage in areas. When we had those storms, there's been a lot of hail that injured the peach, and then I saw perineum get started in those strikes, but they're still there. So the peaches are safe to eat. Go ahead and just cut them off, and you'll be fine.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. So on your lawn, it just sounds like you've got so much going on that this fall, I would find a product like Q4 Plus or another product with quinclorac in it and do...
What's the second one called?
Q4 Plus, or the active ingredient is quinclorac. It's Q-U-I-N-C-L-O-R-A-C. And it's really good against a lot of different broadleafed weeds. So Weed Be Gone Plus, there's a Weed Be Gone product that has the crabgrass killer in it. Crabgrass killer is quinclorac. So if you can't find it, but a local garden center or farm store will have something. And just see if you can kill everything out. But it sounds like the lawn is pretty unhealthy if all those weeds are in there.
Yeah. So how would I get the lawn more healthy?
Well, it seems like a simple question, but it's pretty drawn out. But it starts with maybe some soil testing to make sure you're not deficient in any soils. BYU and USU can do that. Then aerating if you have clay soil, you know, in the spring, and then also proper fertilization, proper irrigation, and proper mowing. But to go through all that could take an entire program. But if you Google or internet search USU and lawn care, there will be fact sheets that will come up. And then what city are you in?
I'm in Sandy.
Sandy. So you may call your local extension office and talk to some of their master gardeners at the diagnostic desk for a few further things. But download some fact sheets on lawn care, because it's not that it's complicated, but deep watering less often, mowing at 3 to 3.5 inches, making sure your soil's fine are among the important things.
Okay. Now, would that, the Q4 Plus, would that also get rid of, like, the stinging nettle as well?
Yes, it would.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for your call this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you this morning, taking your calls and your questions by text at 57500. We have a couple of texters here, Ton, wanting to know about peaches again. And these are some of the similar questions that we're getting. This person says, peach tree that was planted this summer, they've been giving it plenty of water, but the leaves have started turning yellow and falling off. Is there anything they can do for it? So brand new peach tree.
They need to check their irrigation. If it's turning yellow, that's often a sign of too much water. And if the soil's moist.
So they might be overwatering.
Yes, they
the
may
tree.
Be overwatering it. And they'll see these yellow leaves and they're like, oh, it's not enough. I got to do more. But they won't know for sure until they check the roots. And so they need to go to the side of the root ball so they don't disturb the actual roots in the ground, and just dig down and use a hand trowel if the soil's loose, or a regular shovel if it's not. And if that soil is moist, they need to back off on the water a bit. If it's dry, water a little more often.
Next person says their peach pits are splitting open. They find black powdery fungus around parts of the pit. What causes that and how do they prevent that?
I think that we've been getting lots of calls and texts and things about splitting peaches, and I believe it's physiological. And that the fungus inside is probably secondary,
mm-hmm.
and it's not really causing it. There is a newer peach disease. I think it's been around for a while, but we haven't really noticed it, called brown rot. And so because of the monsoonal moisture we received last week, week before, there's lots of crinium blight, and I've been seeing some brown rot and a lot of peach split. And I think that the sudden influx of just a lot of water caused some uncontrolled growth and caused the peaches to split. And so we're seeing a combination of a physiological problem with rain-induced diseases and things. And so it's just been a combination of a lot of things that haven't gone so well for a peach crop this year.
All right. Next listener says they don't do Facebook. Is there any other way to get the program from a past week? And I wanted to tell everyone that, yeah, of course, you could do it on our podcast page. So if you go to the KSLNewsRadio.com and you click on podcasts, you can find the KSL Greenhouse there. If you're also looking for one of our videos and you don't do Facebook, you can also find those on YouTube under the KSL Greenhouse. So there are some other options for folks who don't do Facebook.
I've noticed also that I think KSL is the best place for a landing page, but Apple Podcasts carries our podcast along with other major podcast distributors.
Right. Let's go to Chris in South Ogden. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I just turned on the show, so hopefully you haven't already answered this. I am wondering why I have so many mushrooms in my grass. We have always had a few, but this last week they have just gone crazy.
Well, I need to control myself because I want to blame little demons living in the soil.
And I don't want to eat them.
No.
Please don't eat them.
No. So the monsoonal moisture, all that rain we had over the last couple of weeks has caused lots of mushrooms across the Wasatch Front. And as we dry out, I think that they, if you rake them off, they should diminish a bit. But with cooler weather, they are more common also.
Okay, great. And then question number two, we have two pine trees that are mature that have been planted too close to each other. We're going to take the one down, which will give the remaining one more sun, and we're wondering if the branches will grow back on the side.
Not for years, and it would take, because if the there is no green foliage where the trees are touching, that will never fill in from existing branches. And what will have to happen is the tree just naturally grows. You'll eventually get some expansion from other side branches into that area, but it will take 10 to 15 years.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I enjoy your show.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. Next listener says they have dead spots in their lawns as they cut back on the watering, of course, and they want to know if they can overseed some of those areas.
Yes, you can, but you need to figure out why they're dead. So they need to check the actual soil and see if they've got grubs in those areas. So maybe I'll post over the break to our Facebook page the process of checking for fungal disease and insect problems in lawns, because it's just three steps and it's pretty easy to do. It involves just getting a screwdriver where you're brown and sticking it into the soil. And if it doesn't go in really well, then you know it's probably drought stress. But if it penetrates, and it tells you that there's plenty of water and there's something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the next step would be to pull the brown grass, especially around the edges where it's newly brown.
Mm-hmm.
And if it comes up really easily without roots on it, then it would be insect pests. But if it's rooted and there's enough water, then that would lead to fungal disease. And you may need to have USU do a diagnostic so that you can figure out what particular one. But yes, it is a good time to fix that problem. But if you have lawn grubs or fungal disease, you may need to remedy those while you're fixing the problem so it doesn't come back.
All right, let's take our next caller, and that is Jerry. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
How can we help you?
About 3 or 4 years ago, I drained my hot tub off the deck of our back of our house onto the lawn, thinking I'm watering the trees. And now that location has resulted in killing two trees. I'm thinking that probably the salts in the hot tub water or what, killing replanted trees there?
It could be. Is your soil clay textured?
Not bad. Not very bad. It's pretty good.
Because if it were clay textured, I could see salt impacting those trees for years. Does the area get regular irrigation?
It's on the sprinkler system.
Okay. Yeah. So that would have flushed them through. Now, so you're using a salt-based treatment for the hot tub water and not something like chlorine?
Well, it's a chlorine. They call it a shock treatment. It's a chlorine-based. I think it has bromide and that sort of thing in it. That is a salt, isn't it?
Yeah, it's usually in a salt form. One thing you may need to do is to contact your Department of Health, your county Department of Health, to see if they have access to someone that tests for such things. USU does not. No, not for bromine and things like that. And so they may have access to an analytical lab that can. BYU may have one. But you may need to do some further testing to see if there's something in there. If irrigation hasn't. Go ahead.
The original tree in the area was a full-size linden-type tree. And within a year, the edge of the leaves have turned dark and died, brown, and it died. And then we replanted a tulip tree, and it wasn't 2 years before it was gone. And now I tried a flowering dogwood, and it's showing the same signs.
Well, the flowering dogwood, I'm not surprised, because those are hard to take care of. And so what you could do, just start with a simple soil test from USU that's around $25 or $30.
Mm-hmm.
But if you search USU Analytical Laboratory online, do the routine test and see if anything is off. But it just could be that the soil's fine, but you picked the wrong tree for the spot. So I think that we're up against it. We're really close to the news, so we're going to have to wrap up pretty quick.
All right. All my soil in my whole area here is iron poor, so I have a lot of iron chlorosis yellowing.
Yeah, and that initially wouldn't kill a tree. It takes years, usually, for that to happen.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, and we'll get that done.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. The next person would like to know, what was the lawn grub killer that you recommend?
There's several out there. BioAdvanced has a good one. Scott's GrubX that's a really good product. But go to a garden center. They'll have a selection of 4 or 5, and they're all going to be about equal in their effectiveness.
We talked about powdery mildew at the top of the hour. This person wants to know, have you heard of using a milk spray for powdery mildew? It seems to slow the spread, they say, if they remove the heaviest infected areas.
It can help. I mean, there's like the baking soda and milk. There's a lot of different homebrew mixes.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like I say, I stay away from them a little bit because they're not EPA approved. But yeah, I've heard some people like them and others say they have no effect. But if it's working for you, I can say that the milk is not causing problems.
How about aphids on strawberry plants? How do you get rid of those?
Neem oil or triple action or horticultural soap are all good products for that.
Okay, we need to take a break for the top of the hour news. The number to call with your questions or comments, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new video that Caitlin and I have done of a wonderful garden in Lehigh. This is Randy Blackburn's garden. You'll want to learn more about that and just check out this wonderful video. Stay with us, won't you?
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.